This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. The record number of deaths due to drug overdoses in many parts of the country, including Ohio, is the most tragic result of the heroin and opiate epidemic. But the social costs of drug abuse are also on a dramatic rise. Last year, thousands of individuals were arrested just in Hamilton County alone on drug-related charges. We continue our discussion of the heroin epidemic in our region with Ann Barnum, Interact for Health Vice President of Community Strategies, Libby Harrison, who is the project manager with the Cincinnati Exchange Project, and Chief Tom Sinan with the Village of Newtown Police Department. Chief Sinan also leads the heroin task force with Hamilton County's Association of Police Chiefs. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Ann, we were talking about the Hamilton County Heroin Coalition. So what's the first step the coalition is going to take in dealing with this problem?
Well, I believe that the first step is going to be is bringing everybody together and talking about it.
Getting that collaboration going.
Releasing the plan that was developed by the community members and putting that out there into the community so that people can see where they fit and how they might help. I think that then we have to look at the strategy. So one of them is going to be getting naloxone out into the community, which is a harm reduction strategy. We've already been doing that for a while, but putting more out, particularly with the police in the county, prevention strategies that are going on, having town hall coalitions leading meetings in their community to talk with folks about what is happening and what they can do. We hope to be increasing the amount of treatment that's available in the community in a coordinated way. And finally, making sure that, and I lost, what was my other thing? Yeah, reducing the supply.
I was going to say, the good news is a lot of this has started, and the steering committee with the Hamilton County Heroin Coalition with harm reduction, supply reduction, prevention, and treatment have been meeting, and we've been setting along action steps. So each one of those leaders has to have an action step, and we've been putting those in place. And luckily on the law enforcement end, it has been extremely easy to get these people together. We're pretty much formed. I met with the task force this morning. They're in training this week, and we should be kicking that off by June 1st and starting our first investigations.
Tom, when we talk about the heroin epidemic in our area, I'm interested in law enforcement's perspective. What's law enforcement seeing when it comes to this problem?
Well, we're the ones that are going and seeing the people that are dead and bringing them back with the Narcan. And I think for me personally, we had 3 overdoses in 3 weeks in Newtown, one of which died. And I think for us, and you talk about the age, we have a young lady since 12 has been addicted to heroin. And one of the things we found as police officers, and I guess maybe it's a small town, I don't know if it happens in the big city or not, was we would get people and we tried to get out to treatment. But it is such an epidemic that if you have insurance, you get in. If you don't have insurance, mm-hmm. It could take weeks. So it ends up this 12-year-old, we couldn't get her in 3 separate times. So she is still on the street. She's still addicted. And you got to get people in a certain time and get them into the treatment. So this issue is much bigger than just heroin. It is mental issues. It is depression issues. It is family issues, abandonment. It is a social issue. How do we pay for this? How do we take care of these people? So I think from our perspective, from law enforcement, I know for us in Newtown, we were kind of like, well, where do we go now? What do we do now? And when we started reaching out to people, there's all these organizations and all these groups. But the thing is, they're scattered everywhere. And this coalition was like, hey, let's bring them all together. Let's have them sit at a table. And when someone needs help, there's going to be a one stop, which is the Hamilton County Heroin Coalition will have a website. And from that website, you'll be able to get treatment, prevention, education, tip lines for heroin dealers, overdose tips, things like that.
You know, you had an interesting quote that I read that you say the heroin epidemic has no boundaries. Yeah, I think that's pretty true.
It's absolutely true. Whatever happens anywhere is happening in your community. And it is literally in every community. My community is safe. It is a nice, small, quaint village. We have great services, great community, and 3 overdoses in 3 weeks. And it's not just people that – and there are – I know a lot of people from the law enforcement side, courts, doctors, you know, the pills, Oxycontins, and then they get addicted. But from our end, we're seeing kids. A lot of it's family issues. They don't have a good family structure.
And that's also one of the things we see at the Cincinnati Exchange is we have a questionnaire that our clients fill out. And one of the questions is, did you grow up in a household with addiction? And 70% of our clients grew up in a household with addiction. It's mostly alcohol, followed by coke and opiates of some form. And it is very much a learned behavior. And when it's your parent who you're sitting down and your parent's the first person who's giving you that drug, it doesn't really seem that bad. Lots of our clients started at 13 and the person who gave it to them was their mother, their uncle, their father, their brother, their whatever. It is truly a learned behavior and passed down behavior through genetics.
Oh, that 12, 13, that's really, really shocking. It just, it's really disturbing.
That's not the most obviously. That's the far stretch, but
still
to
think that it can start at that age is just horrifies me. Well, tell me about the Cincinnati Exchange Project, Libby.
We are our area's only syringe exchange at this point. Hopefully there'll be more opening soon with Kentucky's change of the law. We do a one-for-one exchange, and it's a form of harm reduction. So recognizing that drugs have innate harm in them, we're trying to reduce that harm, meeting the people where they're at. They're already addicted. We know that. We're trying to keep diseases out. We're trying to get them activated into care and be a safe place for them to be. We are the one place that they know wants to see them, isn't going to shame them. We are just there about their health. There's never any judgment. And so we're often an entry point into treatment or into furthering their education or into housing or domestic violence shelters, because we're this place where they come and they just get the supplies they need to stay away from HIV and hepatitis C and B.
Now, have other places that have needle exchange programs, have they seen success with that?
Oh, yeah, across the country. Needle exchanges have been around for a long time, 30 plus years. And it's mostly, they've been mostly on the coast, but they're moving inward. And they have great success. And the CDC, our Center for Disease Control and Prevention, backs it up as a wonderful way of battling addiction as well as disease.
513-419-7100. If you'd like to join the conversation, let's talk with Jane in Dayton. Good afternoon, Jane.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm a recovering addict. I've been clean for 2 years. I was actually a functioning addict for 7 years. I'm a nurse. I actually lost my nursing license because of my addiction. I became addicted to Dilaudid through multiple surgeries. And since I had easy access to it, it was easy to get while I was working. But, you know, a lot of people, they think that people that have addictions, it won't affect them or it won't affect my family. But it hits everybody. And, you know, I didn't wake up one day and say, oh, what am I going to do today? I think I'll become an addict. You know, it's because there was other things going on in my life. And there's such a, at least in people that I've dealt with, you know, they think, oh, you're a drug addict. You're just worthless, you know? But, you know, there's so many people out there that need help and they don't know where to turn to and they're scared and they want to get off the drugs. And luckily I went to Turning Point here in Dayton and they saved my life. And I have a great doctor that works with me. I'm on Suboxone and, my life has turned around because of this.
Yeah, we're glad to hear things are going better for you. That's good.
Thank you, Jane. I'm sorry, Ann. That's really common. I think heroin addiction and alcoholism have a lot more in common than people realize. Many people are functioning heroin addicts. They have jobs. They have kids. Those kids go to school every day. They do their homework.
Libby, can I interrupt?
Oh, of course.
When you say functioning, kind of explain what that means. I mean, they appear perfectly normal and they're carrying on life like they normally would, or
pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah. That, you know, like the person who called in the first half who was talking about what are the signs. That's really hard.
Yeah.
Like other than, yes, your behavior changes, there's not this telltale sign. Like alcoholism is a lot easier to figure out because you smell like an alcoholic. No offense, alcoholics. But, you know, they come home, they're wobbly. A heroin addict a lot of times or an opiate addict, they get to this place where they no longer get high. So they behave just as I'm behaving right now. Because they're just not getting sick. They're just normal. There isn't a telltale sign, especially if it is. Heroin, if you're injecting it, yeah, you're going to get track marks. They're pretty hard to hide. But if they're just taking pills or they're smoking or they're snorting, It's not that easy to tell.
Yeah. Sorry, I interrupted your train of thought, though. I just wanted to make sure that people understood what that meant. I've heard that term many a time, but never had it defined before. So.
Well, I think most people know what a functioning alcoholic is. Most of us have one in our family. and so, you know, we can picture that, but we have this Hollywood image of heroin and the person, you know, down on laying in a gutter.
Right. Living in a box on the street. Yeah.
That's not the majority of heroin addicts. Majority are much like I am.
And I think it forces us to change our viewpoint on people that are addicted. And from the law enforcement side, I think that's one of the sides you're seeing very often now is we're changing our philosophy on how we deal with people with addictions. We're letting go of that judgment. We're letting go of that persecution on them. And we're trying to say a lot of it is getting them help. And that is what law enforcement's doing. I think that's what's changing from the supply side is not just arresting people, but how can we get you into treatment? And the only way this is really going to work is if we can reduce supply along with demand. If we reduce supply and the demand's still there, they'll still get it. But if we can reduce both, then we can make an impact.
Is it enough, Tom, to just get tough on drug offenders?
No, it's more than that. It is a complex issue. And I think that in society, we're missing that addiction is there's mental issues, there's depression, there's family issues, there's social issues. There's a lot more to addiction than just like everyone has said, including the caller. No one wakes up. I've talked to people who've been addicted to heroin, crack cocaine, 20-year addicts, and not a single one says, you know what? When I grow up, I'm going to be an addict. It's the coolest thing in the world. I've never heard that. What I've heard is, I didn't want to do this. I don't want to be on it. I need help. I just can't.
And what I will say is that addiction is like a disease. A lifestyle-related health condition. Some other lifestyle-related health conditions, diabetes, lung cancer, other issues that relate to what you do in your life, and then it becomes something more than that. Addiction is a brain disease. The chemicals change your brain in a way that is... It will be there. It's always there. That change comes in. So once you're an addict, using that chemical again is never a wise thing to do. It can lead you right back into active addiction. So I think that as a disease, it is both a treatable disease and a preventable disease. We know what to do in both of those cases. So we can't just rely on, and we know that just arresting someone does nothing to either treat or prevent the disease.
Let's talk with Matthew. Good afternoon, Matthew.
Good afternoon. I'm a recovering addict. I've got 5 years sober. I got sober when I was 18.
Yay for you.
Good job.
I was injecting heroin and used pills all, started in junior high and used them all through high school. And, I'm from a very small town in Indiana. I'm from Brookville. And, I just wanted to say that, all my closest friends are also recovering. And, we all got sober together and we stayed sober together and we keep each other clean. And I think a big reason why a lot of people trying to get sober have trouble with it long term is because of we just live in a culture where alcohol is tolerated and alcohol is almost encouraged. And I think people have no idea that it is a drug, that it is just as destructive as heroin and, you know, cocaine or meth. So I think just like people need to, I think communities in the area need to just really take a look at themselves and, you know, discuss, like, are we promoting a life of sobriety or are we promoting a life of using mood-altering chemicals? That's just my comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Matthew. We appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, he's right. And I you know, alcohol's kind of my... I work with heroin addicts, but I'm very, alcohol is so celebrated in our culture. Like, I grew up watching very little TV because my mom's fun. And we watched The Cosby Show. Like, we were allowed to watch that. They never drank on The Cosby Show. And you turn on the television now, and every single show, they get home and they open a bottle of wine. And I don't drink much, more just because I'm a jerk when I drink, and I got tired of making the apology phone calls. So I don't really drink, but people treat me oddly. Like, people are uncomfortable when I say, no, I don't want to have a drink, because we're supposed to drink. We're treated that way. And it does all play in together. Like, we can't separate these addictions out from each other, especially, you know, the top three that really destroy families are alcohol, heroin, and crack. But alcohol's celebrated and let, I mean, we're going to have a wine tasting fundraiser.
It's legal and it's socially acceptable. Yeah.
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 Well, and I want to say one of the things that I think is really important that people understand is that any one of these strategies alone doesn't work. And so we have to have things like a syringe exchange where people go who want to be healthy. They don't go there because they want to be sick. They go there because they want to be healthy. And so you're already a portion of the way there when you have someone who wants to be healthy, and you can talk to them about that when you go to the syringe exchange. When Tom goes out to a call and has someone who he knows is an addict, you know, for him to have a wide range of things, even if the person says, I'm not going to treatment, well, will you go someplace where you can be healthy, where they're going to do a hepatitis C test on you if you've not had one, an HIV test? They're going to do a pregnancy test if you're a woman, and help you get to the point where you're more healthy. Those are the things that I think are helpful.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I think we've gotten creative in law enforcement and how we get people into treatment. I think a lot of people think that it's just easy to quit, and it's not. That withdrawal is tremendously difficult. And like Steve said earlier, that is what the real issue is, and that is what's so difficult about getting off. So when you talk to someone, I've had people literally brought them back to life. They were dead. We need to get you in treatment. I'm not going. And it's the fear of that withdrawal that ends up being the issue. We have to be creative and try to help them get into treatment.
Tina emailed, she wanted to know, is the price of detox and rehab programs, is that a hindrance to fighting the problem?
Yeah. It is and it isn't. If you don't have insurance, you can't really get into treatment. If you have insurance, it depends on how good your insurance is. Medicaid will pay for some stuff, but generally they won't pay for overnight, like actually going into a long to a detox that you're going to keep you and medicate you, which is really what people need. And if I had my way, people would be in their 90 days, but that would be the start. But I also, the other problem is women have no place to put their kids. Oh, yeah. You know, all of these moms want to get sober, nowhere to put their kids. We as a community need to be responsible for these children, and not through foster homes, but actually saying, I will help you. I will help the grandparent, the aunt, the uncle, the whoever. Right. But there are these huge barriers of money and family.
And it is just recently with the Affordable Care Act that we got a broad-based program that says substance abuse and mental illness are going to be treated like other medical conditions, that they are going to be treated like the diseases that they are. And so it's very important that people look at what does your insurance cover, because it doesn't cover all of the same things. I mean, it's the same with other diseases, but we need to know that. And people need to know that everybody has a spot that they can go in. They can learn about this. They can reach out to others and help them out. They can reduce the access, social access, you know, not having parties, you know, the stopping it before it starts, I think is really important. We can take your drugs that you're done with and dispose of them at police stations. We've got drop boxes in most of the police stations.
Prescription medications being dropped off.
For prescription medications to be dropped off. We can help promote policy changes. You know, talking to your representatives about, we need more of this. We need a comprehensive bill. You know, we need certain things in our communities that are doing that.
And looking down the road, what kind of impact do you think the healthcare, the Hamilton County Heroin Coalition, what do you think that's going to have?
Oh, I think it brings this out of the shadows and into the public eye. It becomes an issue that people are now talking about. The group that was working behind the scenes for several years is applauding the efforts to get this out in front. I think it will make a difference because everybody will be working on the same goal. And that goal is to reduce the number of deaths and the disability that comes from addiction.
Tom, what do you think the impact's going to be of having this coalition?
I think it's tremendous getting all these people on board. It is everyone that is needed to fight this epidemic. And they're all at the same table and we're all working together. I don't see how we do not make an impact with this. I honestly believe that this epidemic is curable. It is preventable. We can make a dent in it. I truly believe that. This is something that we know we can do, that we got the resources. It's just a matter of getting everybody together, and that battle's done. Everyone's there. Everyone's at the table. Everyone's ready to go. So now it's just, let's push it forward and let's keep going.
And Libby, what do you think the impact's going to be of having a coalition like this?
Primarily the ease of us being able to work together. You know, things break down when groups don't know about each other. And there's so many different agencies and organizations that it's really easy to not know about something because there's so much. So when we all sit down at the table together and create things together, it's easy to say, okay, I have this person. Can you help them? Because I now know I know the agency. I have somebody I can call immediately. And so it's creating the relationships that will make it easier to get our clients care.
Okay, so it's making it easier to get the resources. Mm-hmm. Accessibility is going to be a lot easier than it has been in the past because of the coalition.
Mm-hmm.
Anne, are you hopeful that we can make a dent in this problem?
I am. I am very hopeful that we can. We are seeing things happen. We are seeing deaths avoided by using naloxone in the community. And that's one of the first wins that you can begin to see is that people are beginning to stop this. I think we are seeing some increases in treatment and in treatment availability. You know, as Libby was talking, we're lucky in Hamilton County. We have two programs for women that take their children mm-hmm. with them, but that's not the case for everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, Anne, Libby, and Tom, thank you so much for joining us
this
afternoon.
Thank you.
Anne Barnum is the Interact for Health Vice President, Community Strategies. Libby Harrison is the project manager with the Cincinnati Exchange Project, and Chief Tom Sinan with the Village of Newtown Police Department.